preparations to a further date. And there are tentative proposals that have been put on the table that the deliberations would be on Tuesday next week. And we'll finalize deliberations on the following day, Wednesday, from 9 o'clock to about 10:30. We'll then do voting, clause by clause, as required by the rules of Parliament. And I hope such timelines permit of the bills to be printed and all, and so on and so forth. I was hastened to mention that the debate, therefore, will be for the on that day will be for the Further Education and Training Amendments Bill. Because there are substantive further proposals on the Higher Education Act by the Minister, we will request an extension by some time so that we could process the Higher Education Laws Amendment Bill a bit differently. We have sought permission. You know that scheduling for matters in the House is done through the Chief Whip of the ruling party. The whip of the committee had interacted with the relevant authorities as regards the aspect of the committee being given permission to revisit the bill, including the original act, in terms of the rules. The legal advisory team of Parliament has drafted a motion that will be tabled to the House. We thought we could do it today. Today is a joint sitting. We would not succeed. We thought we'd do it tomorrow. The following day is questions to the President. We don't have time. Now, we'll do it in the next possible opportunity. And then we are certain that the plenary will approve of our request. And then the administration will deal with how they locate us in terms of values and everything else. I hope that will make sure those are the tentative dates that will be properly communicated to us. We've made requests through the WIP to request basic education that usually is on Tuesdays to allow us to use that day, and then they would use Wednesday that we usually use as higher education and training. And I thought that I should make that announcement before we commence. Therefore, that is our opening for the meeting. Today we are supposed to deal with responses from the department. We've had 6 presentations advanced to the committee yesterday by various stakeholders, and we have written submissions from 17 stakeholders. And I would have wished that we should put that on the record as to which institutions are those that have sent those representations. Copies thereof have been served to members accordingly, and I hope and trust that we have perused those submissions from the public, and then we'll be able to take them into consideration in our deliberations at an appropriate time. And we hope that also the department was made aware of those submissions so that they are able to consider them in their response. We are doing so as a matter of courtesy. Some people think that if we are abdicating our responsibility, we are not. We are merely wanting to hear the department as a stakeholder because they've initiated this legislation before we now should process it. It is actually at our platform, Banga, to decide. After they've submitted the bill, the decision lies this side. So I'm just going to listen to them righteous. May I permit Anakin Bishop to lead the presentation of the response?
Yes, presentations that we've received is obviously they are not in a specific order. We've dealt with it basically on how we received it and how it was provided to us, and also looking at those that got more substantial issues. We've put them more to the front than dealing with those that are merely providing broad comments. The first one that we've looked at is that of the Workers' College. It was also one that made the oral. Oral presentation to the portfolio committee. Chair, the focus here is on the FET Act, FET Colleges Amendment Act or Bill, and it is dealing with the key issues they raise is that of a definition of a college. That college definition, which is currently in the legislation, be expanded to also include civil society education organizations. The difficulty we've got is that a specific inference has been made between a private institution which is for profit and those that are not for profit. And the argument, as we understood it, is to focus on the fact that they want to get the recognition within the as an organ of state, but not falling within the control of the state. Now, Chair, the first thing that we need to put on the table is the fact that a college is a defined concept within the framework of this Act. And to include a broad concept of a civil society of education organizations is an undefined concept which would make it very, very difficult to provide legal certainty to the legislation if that's included. And the question is then, if it is included, then where would it be? Would it be in the public colleges or in the private colleges? Now, if it is a private college, then it doesn't matter. Any person, including a civil organization, can register a private college. The Act already makes provision, therefore. If it is part of the public colleges, it becomes a problem, especially on their interpretation that they're not under the control of the department or the state and want to deal with it. The next issue they raise is the issue of not-for-profit. When it comes to your private providers, the issue of profit or non-profit is not the issue. It is the core business and the criteria that they may, that in the, that person must comply with who seeks registration. And that is objective criteria. And for profit is, or not profit is not a criteria that we take into account when it comes to registration. So it's not a factor that can prejudice them at all. The issue that they raise, I think, is more to do with a policy issues and within the existing policy framework, how one can deal with those things that they've raised. And they specifically the recognition, the interaction, and the collaboration within the broader system as a whole. The next issue they raise is this issue of levels 1 to 5. That is restricted in this amendment bill to 1 to 4, NQF levels 1 to 4. The reason for that is that in the current legislative framework, landscape, this may be a better word, the education institutions are divided between your further education and training sub-framework, which is the NQF sub-framework we are talking about, and that is defined as the general and further education and training sub-framework. It is a defined unit with a quality council dealing for that sub-framework. Then it is also providing another sub-framework for higher education, which is running from level 5 up to level 10. The issue of demarcating that levels for your public institutions might be a problem, as it is it would require amendments to at least the Higher Education Act, the GenFEDQA Act, the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act, the FET Colleges Act, and it would also mean or possibly have implications on the ability of the Quality Council to deal with those qualifications within the new levels. As to the implications of your private providers, your private institutions, there's no limitation on any of the legislation to indicate that the private providers cannot register within the ambit of the FET Colleges Act or the Higher Education Act, and therefore can provide qualifications and part qualifications in any of those sub-frameworks. There's no limitation to say you're only a FET private institution. You can be a private institution that is registered as to offer qualifications within the FET sub-framework, as well as a private provider registered to offer qualifications within the higher education sub-framework. So there is no limitation in the current sub-framework to cause a concern as raised by the college. So, Chair, the view of the department is that it is a matter which, or the issues they've raised in this presentation, or this presentation, is a matter that one can manage within the current framework, and there is no specific impact that's coming out of that submission to the bill, the bill, and that there is no proposed amendments that's flowing from it. Just a last comment. The aspect of the other sub-framework, the QCTO, the Trade and Occupational sub-framework, is also a sub-framework where your private institutions or private providers can have the flexibility to move into that as well. So there is no limitations
that Section 29, Subsection 3 of the Constitution clearly says everyone has the right to establish and maintain at their own expense independent educational institutions, provided they don't discriminate on the basis of race and they maintain standards that are not inferior to those comparable to the state, and that the state is not precluded to subsidize such institutions, and so on. Won't that be sufficient? Because now the authority and the protection to establish an institution, an independent educational institution, is derivative of the Constitution and clearly articulated at that level, and is not tempered. Now the definition on the table relates to merely state-owned, controlled, funded institutions that are accountable to the state, and those would be the 3 universities that we have in the country, and the 50 colleges that we have. And this act seeks to alter or reconfigure the orientation of these 50 colleges, and to now change the nomenclature of FET to continuing education and training colleges, and so on, and introduce the typology of a vocational and training college, a community education training college. And that is the context of bringing this definition as suggested by the amendment. On the basis of my reflection, may I permit the presenter from the Workers' College to respond to that, and then I'll allow members to direct an abolition of the
Thank you, Chair. I didn't know I'm going to get a second bite at this, so that's why I was feeding myself before I started. Whilst I accept the submissions or the response from the department, I suppose the difficulty we have, focusing on the legal implications of our proposal, is that essentially the work that we do is in the public domain, and that is our difficulty. And the work that we do is that we work with community organizations, we work with trade unions, we work with all these institutions that are working towards the public good. So it's not just purely this definition of when you're not for gain and you create a charitable institution or a welfare institution not for gain. It's really more the focus on what it is that we are attempting to do. And what we are attempting to do through the whole notion of education is to bring about political, social, economic change within a society, which we believe is the true nature of education. The anomaly that we find is that these public institutions, higher education institutions, recruit their people individually. So people, even though it's a public institution, the state subsidizes individuals to advance their career in the hope that at the end of the day, they will come back and plow back in the society. Of course, what they do plow back is not necessarily for the general good. It's actually for their own advancement. And that's where we're finding the contradiction. Now, here you have a college like ours, and there are many others, who are doing this public work. We're doing this work, and as I indicated in our presentation, with the support and encouragement of the Department of Higher Education and the Minister, as well as the National Skills Fund, as well as the Department of Labor, obviously, in terms of a technical legalistic approach, how do you amend an act which, when you describe public institutions, immediately they must come under the control of the state? Now, maybe somewhere in between, because what's happening now, you're talking of, in this further education bill, it's talking about, firstly, changing the name of further education institutions. Okay. And then it's also including in the definition of college, the adult education institutions. We probably lie somewhere in between, if not higher up, or maybe between the further education and the higher education, or maybe even higher than the higher education, because of our moral and ethical values that we're trying to propose. So, but what we are saying is that in a society, And I suppose the response which we acknowledge and we know the difficulty is, but we are saying that in a society that is trying to promote a kind of public good, that is trying to bring about these changes, we find ourselves as institutions, education institutions, that are actually carrying out work that speaks more to the public good than even your public institutions as they exist. Because currently your public education institutions are recruiting people as individuals who have to pay their way. Whereas with us, we don't recruit organizations that are existing in the broader civil society and who are working for the public good as any of the people, including, and maybe I must whisper this, local councillors, provincial ministers are coming to the college and they're getting that training. So I suppose that's the other thing, again, which comes to the levels of 1.125, is that currently our diploma program, which we have not gone through the NQF, but we've been accredited by the University of KwaZulu-Natal, is at a level 5 and sometimes 6, depending on how they interpret it. Now, when we looked at the Act, and we approached the higher education at one stage to register ourselves, it's so onerous in terms of the registration, the process itself, that immediately we realize that if we do that, if we follow that process, to a large extent it will start to affect the way in which we deliver our education. And that has been, that's another issue that we've been taking up. Thank you.
From me, and then Makubele is going to try and help ledge on the issues on the table. The constitution, our constitution, seems to have the foresight that there could be such institutions that actually are above the narrow confines of state-controlled educational institutions, such that it on its own, being the apex law, it says that you can register your own institution. And it says that you have to maintain standards comparable to the state, probably not identical to the state somehow. Maybe the aspect of being of the grandiose process of recognition of programs might be an aspect that could be dealt with at a policy level with SAGWA and other quality councils that you may want to approach for accreditation of your programs. The fundamental thing that we should all accept is that the very original bill that is being amended defines and recognizes private institutions. The aspect of being private does not relate to the actual enterprise. It merely relates to the fact that the state would not control you, would not shackle you in terms of the programs you ought to offer. It will not delimit you in terms of how you get resources outside, for instance. problems, and the issues you're raising are polycentric and purely within the remit of the department and the quality councils that are responsible to the minister, I think. And that will be here, this parliament, that can be resolved between the minister, yourselves, and SACO. But for the end, I believe that it will be sufficient to recognize that private institutions can enter into the terrain and provide education, and the state is not precluded from funding these institutions. And the income must enter into public-private partnerships, because we need massification of the post-school education system. And we are overstretched in the state, and I think that is probably the route to go from our side. That is my perspective. I may not determine policy. Now, can I allow Makubele to come in?
Chair, largely you have covered that aspect, because I wanted to as well put it the other way around. Listening to the presentation, I don't get what the challenge is, other than the name tag or category, which must describe differently. But in as much as being subsidized by the state is like not to be achieved, and there's no difficulty. In the past, which no longer exists now, we used to have what we call the state-aided kind of institutions. And there were state institutions. And there were state-aided, and there was private. Now, if you're falling in between, it means you must be state-aided. You're not controlled by the state. You are not a state institution. You are not entirely private. That's what you say. But for now, what we have, it's either you state or you're private. But the state can still be able to subsidize or assist here and there financial and so on. So there's no real challenge. Unless if you're saying, if you're not recognized as private, you feel there are particular challenges in your operations or something like that, which I don't get when listening to you. And surely in terms of the provision that has been given now, to a private institution, the rest of the things that are tied to that, either profit making or not and so on, are immaterial, are literally irrelevant. Whatever you do, but yes, it must be within the standard. So I thought that clarifies the issue. More so that if you still want to pursue it, perhaps it will not be within the provisions of this particular amendment or act. It may be something that could be taken through in terms of discussions and seeing what you mean. If you think you are a creator, that you think you are not well accommodated in either side, you think you are a different phenomenon altogether, we can perhaps continue to engage with that beyond this particular amendment.
Went through IMSA programs, E2 programs,
type of education that we offer, which focuses to specific needs in that particular period of time. If we deal with that, there are available frameworks, legislative frameworks, allows for accreditation of qualifications, for instance, and the issue of your own independence that even yesterday you raised, that we don't want to be programmed by the state, you see, because we offer a certain type of and you even say today you might be above or in between, you don't know. What is more interesting about what we have in this country, which I'm beginning to understand, you know, in the student movement, and understand academic freedom and the frameworks that we have, even in your own philosophical framework, the current frameworks allow for academic freedom of institutional autonomy. It gets to the issues that we are also raising. You fear that the state will impose certain things in which you still want to have your own freedoms academically in offering your programs. Therefore, what I'm trying to say, the emphasis of public education in South Africa, as we want to move towards public access, does not necessarily exclude what you want to achieve. Rather, there are certain aspects of it that protects your independence and autonomy and programs that you offer. Therefore, I'm saying maybe the department is correct in saying we must deal deeper with the concept that you're talking about in that post-school white paper. Maybe there is a college type of an institution that they're talking about. Maybe in defining that, we should consider the issues that you are raising and say what type of an institute, understanding the type of centers we have in the country, how do we define that college type of an institution? I think it will be an interesting debate to get your inputs in that particular aspect, because what you are raising, to me, I think it falls under that, because communities are collectives, they have different interests. Therefore, I think let's put that debate there. Let us not close what we are raising in this meeting. Let's take it there and discuss it more. Thank you.
Any further comments before we close on this aspect? It is seem that members are, let me allow you to respond and then we close.
No, thank you, Chair. I like the statements that probably, you see, maybe what we're speaking to is not so much the kind of public-private debate, but more, I suppose in a sense, it's a political discourse in education. And the discourse is about that when we're talking about education in the public sphere, the state is recognizing these. You see, if it's a public institution like a university or a what is now going to be called these continuing institutions and adult education, they get this public recognition, which says that the state is now giving the recognition. This is what is the kind of predominant education discourse and institutions in our society. Okay? Now, I'm saying that this civil society education institutions have to become part of that public thing. Because just to give an example, even though people qualify individually, I was just listening to, I think it's Tourism Month, or no, it was something else, veterinary, and the minister was saying that probably when they qualify, they must go and serve one year's public service. Now, with our people, they don't have to go and serve 1 year in public service because they are in public service because of the nature of the organizations. But I just thought I'd just raise that as an interesting thing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I must thank you for having come. Your contributions have been very wonderful. The unremitting parliamentary discourse that emanates from your contributions empowers us as members of parliament
further consider as a committee to register as a group so that they can just have a program for us as a group of this council of committees.
they must consider calling, a program for members. Yesterday we had some school saying they've got academic English, and it's still in the back of my mind. I would like to go to that school, to get that academic English, to be able to deal with professors and so on. No, thank you very much.
Yeah, if I can just respond, there is an invitation. We did invite the minister to our graduation, which happens every year. We can invite you. But with one rider, when the minister came, he used it as a platform to engage us in education discourse, and we almost ran late with our graduation. So we would appeal to you when we invite you, Chair, and I know you can tension your members. Please keep it short. But also we would probably try and have it closer to Christmas so that it can become more of a social engagement as well as an educational. Thank you.
Well, I hope no many persons must clear the house. Thank you very much. Proceed, Advocate Boshoff.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next body we look at is the one that made the presentation yesterday, the second presenter. They dealt with the issue that the Education South Africa is a wide SAU and tourism. The issue is about the programs and courses they are presenting, which is unique to the languages and the needs that's applicable to it. It's not clear as to what is the actual status of those programs. Are they qualifications? Are they registered on the NQF? How do they fit in with the system? It was not presented at all. It is a specific skill that's been trained, but without all those details, it's very difficult to deal with the issues in the context of this bill. And what we propose from the department side, and we have already gave them, Mr. Patel gave them the contact details on pertaining of himself, and also to assist them in how to contact the correct persons within the department and SAQWA in order to see how one can address their concerns. There's clearly a frustration. There's clearly a need for them to get accepted in the delivery of these programs. The difficulty is the terminology. What is the meaning of a program? The legislation are dealing with qualifications and part qualifications because it's a substantive unit that's quality control which comply with all the frameworks, and it is linked up with Section 29, which you read out, which is dealt with the standards that you must compare the private providers against. If you don't have those standards, it would be any person can do whatever they want. And therefore, it is important that one must deal with it outside this forum and more to look at the concerns from a departmental point of view. And they've got that invitation, they've got that details already, and they've been invited to contact Mr. Patel. I don't know if you want to add anything, Mr. Patel. Chair, may I move to the next one? Chair, the next one was the South African Women in Cooperatives. Chair, once again, it is a more generic approach that they've put on the table, which is, first of all, very positive towards the concept of a community education and training college. And but it is this notion of creating an institution specific for cooperatives. Now, Chair, that's not excluded in the say is the fact that the community education and training is just starting off with the AED centers by converting them into the college. And that's not the the community education and college that's envisaged in this legislation. The community education and training college is part of a conceptualization which is currently refined in policy, but it is dealing with the community needs and the specific aim and application that you would find in that institution will be within the policy framework, and the aspects of the framework that is currently provided in this principle act allows for site-off deliveries. It provides the framework within which you can have a presence even in communities, the small townships, the remote villages in rural areas. So that possibility exists in the legislation. It will all depend on money, and it will depend on the rollout of the policy framework. But that is issues that one must manage within the framework. This is an attempt to create the legal framework. Once that's in place, then these specific needs can be addressed. And the first step is to deal with the framework. Now, there's no negative comment that was made. There were none of them on the table. And therefore, there is support. I think the notion of looking at a dedicated college, a community college, to deal with this training is an aspect that one must take further, and clearly this committee can play a leading role also in influencing the minister and the policy structures in order to deal with that. But as to the legislative position, it is my view and the department's view that it is flexible enough to also address their concerns.
We'll talk to Hisa about introducing a program on cooperatives. No. Some sort of program, not a qualification, just a program that really orientates them around all those dynamics of cooperatives. They can do that even free of charge. Those are professors, I'm sure, if you talk to them, they can really help them.
That, obviously, that is a possibility, but I think it is also, if you look at it, they are very concerned about a simplistic approach also at the lowest level to a higher level. And the concept of a community college can play a very important role to address the basic needs that they've also invented. But it is true that it is higher than just community colleges. The comments we are making focus on the community colleges because of that better...
Gotcha. Chair, I mean, I think the two terms that are coming up into these amendments are very, very significant, broad and flexible. The one is continuing. Continuing doesn't put any limitation on age, what programs, how far you go. The second one is about community. And community is not only a concept linked to a geographical local authority or community. You can have a community of aviators, a community of really scarce skill that can specialize. So for example, cooperatives, all the people involved in cooperatives are a community dealing with cooperatives. And so therefore the flexibility and the potential is really open.
Thank you, Chair. The next slide is dealing with the national year we've just indicated that that is possible. Once again, in general, it's very supportive to the bill. It is, there are no critical issues that they raise, and in fact, it is supporting the notion that the community need this type of structures, and in fact, the cooperatives got such a wide variety of possibilities that it would be very difficult even to identify a single institution to deal with it because of the possibility that can exist. And therefore, the flexibility that you've got is that you need to provide those education within education institutions, and this is a vehicle which will deal with at least the qualifications within the general and further education and training sub-framework. So, Chair, the discourse that is also identified with the emergency policy, it's part of the debate in the white paper. It is also an issue which is, I think, an aspect that we are focusing on to provide a meaningful community education in this community education and training colleges. It is not the old ABET as we know it. It is much wider than that, and it is also not linked just to level one, but it is up to level four, which provides much more scope and flexibility. Discourse obviously is under discussion, and it is a many of the policy issues will be dealt with in the white paper.
They would like to be put as one of our important stakeholders. Let's proceed.
The submissions to the parliamentary public comments that were orally made, we've dealt with them. We are now looking at the others. There's one of ESOM which I will come back slightly later. But the first one that we've dealt with that was not in the oral presentation is that of the Auditor General. Chair, they've actually made two specific set of proposals, one for the Higher Education Act, Higher Education and Training Amendment Bill, and one for the Education and Training Colleges Amendment Bill. But Chair, the nature and essence of those comments are very similar, as it focused on the two institute types, the one of the SISET and the other one on the NIHE, that the National High Education the Institute for Higher Education. What they've dealt with are specific aspects, which is listed in a table form, and we've went through each one of them.
We just want to hear that. What is this size set?
Yes. pipes that's introduced by this bill, as well as the skills providers. And then, Chair, with the amendments to the Higher Education Act, the National Institute for Higher Education, they are more on scope and application, and depending on the needs of the higher education as a whole.
The minister establishes investors. Does he consult with the CHE before taking the final decision? Because we need some parity. We should not find a decision where when we're dealing with investors, the minister may establish investors. So far as I know, in terms of the Education Act, there's no requirement to consult anybody. You just take a policy decision as the state. Obviously,
it's not the case.
What happens?
There is a specific requirement that the minister must consult with the CHE,
okay,
and must give their advice before that is done.
Then you want to make them the same. So it means there will be parity.
No.
For the FGs, that is the body to go to.
Yeah, Chair. The first one they put on the table is that when it comes to the establishment of the FET colleges, currently the Act is not requiring a consultation process because the SISEP is not in the legislation as yet. The comment they've put is that we should include that in the legislation, and we agree that it is a good principle, Chair. So what you see in red is the response of the department to say we agree that there should be such an amendment if the committee shares that view, but it is a good principle.
Let me hear the member's take on that one. It will help us to when he finishes, we'll also finish.
Member? I want to check the use of me. Does it necessarily mean that it gives the minister a leeway for him, if needs be, that he may not consult, say, SAIVCT? Does that imply that?
No, Chair.
Oh. It's bound to consult, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm raising to it. We just called in the committee for cash on that. Others were advising that the reason why they use men, they don't use SHA, is to allow the minister not to consult. You understand? Therefore, what I like, because we forced them to put after. This gentleman, just put that after, meaning it must be done after consultation.
I'll share with you a decision of the Constitutional Court of the meaning of May,
yeah,
as it relates to legislation. Those people may not be correct. May mean shall. There is a decision of the Constitutional Court. I'll share with you later on. It's my field. Okay.
By the minister consulting the institution, the institute. I mean the FAA, South African Institute for, is that institute similar to the this other institute of higher education?
Legislation provide a different approach There were no support. There were no focus of assistance, development, and the coordination, which is critical to make these babies into adults that can deliver. With higher education, you've got a different scenario. You've got institutions that actually are sometimes seen as in ivory towers. And the importance is not to develop that institution, but to identify specific scope and applications which within government need will require an influencing the institutions in order to move and to deliver on the needs of the broader society and not only the institutional perspective. But it's not development. It is a different approach to it. And the focus with higher education is much more specialized. It's not a generic approach. It's a specialized approach, which you need to focus on that specific field, that specific scope and application, and to bring the existing institutions within the directives and, well, not the directives, but the aim of the broader governmental policies. So there is a clear difference between the two. And so that's why also with your your college sector is a single institute, whilst with higher education it would be impossible to have a single one. You need to have more than one according to the needs as identified, because the one system is much more sophisticated than the other.
So let me just take it a bit further. I think I get so far the differences that you're pointing out. But the one aspect to me is that this amendment doesn't envisage a situation where, as the institute gets to develop, to establish, develop and all that, then we'll have to develop the act as well. Or will not be the act, these amendments and introduction of this institute should mean that it's broader to allow that even as it gets to be established, developed, and is to, what is it, to mature with time, we don't necessarily have to come back to the act. And the second aspect is that when we say this institute, it's not necessarily an institution as defined by the Higher Education Act. To me, partly, it may be responded to by what we have said already, but there could be a second interpretation to saying what do we mean, are there two kinds of definitions for an institute, that which we talking about here on vocational and continuing education and that which is in the higher education.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to try it first and then Eric and Boshoff can come and correct me. The other significant difference is that in the higher education institute, the scope, application and functions are not defined. So there is still a process that the minister must undergo in regards to establishing an institute. And the reason for that is that each process within the higher education is unique. You don't want to, because a lot of the powers are devolved to universities. So it's only in the high coordinating national coordinating requirements that it may emerge. Now nothing stops at some point in future that there may be an institute with some of the functions to size it for universities. So, for example, if it means that universities are not able to govern, they're not able to do finances, the lecturers need training, so the micromanagement and support, the development requirements for universities that an institute like that can be established. But when the legislation allows the minister to, after consultation with the CHE, do it. In regards to CIVSEC, the functions are clearly defined in legislation. So they can start immediately once the funding and of the ministers done the consultation for that to already be running. There would not be a need to come back to Parliament in regards to that. And further, if there are functions that may emerge afterwards, the clause allows for it to be done under prescription via regulations. Chair, I just missed some of the argument in the last one. Can I just say that the may doesn't describe the after consultation. The may is around a discretion of whether an institute, whether the colleges must be established. That's the may. But once that may is effected, the after consultation is a must.
in the
the people dealing with the language services if there's such a division here. We can't even talk about that. Now, let's make sure that the final document we receive on Tuesday, it is devoid of any mistakes of that nature. The only, not even legal mistakes, because we've got many lawyers here. Now I'm not a lawyer here, I'm just a facilitator of the meeting. We've got two powerful lawyers here, perhaps even more. So we must not have those mistakes. Let's continue. I'm just saying, this question is on record, so that it must not be said that we don't have time to enter into the administrative aspect of those corrections ourselves at any stage, but we know it is also our responsibility. So members, let's really, in our spare time, read the two bills for typographical and grammatical mistakes so that during deliberations we can effect those proper corrections as required by law.
Thank you, Chair. Now, we obviously are listening very carefully, and we will focus very deeply on that, and that is not only from the departmental side, but all three sets of lawyers that's assisting in the book. And we will obviously, Chair, this is one that's been identified, and we fully support it from the departmental side. Chair, the next issue they raised is an amendment to the section, the new section 43E, capital E, 2B. And Chair, the issue there is that currently it provides that the minister will, or the within the financial year, the reports must be submitted to the minister at the time and in the manner as the minister may determine. Chair, they propose a specific date. Chair, the FMA determined the date of 31st of August as the date by which the financial statements must be submitted, and Chair, it is our proposal that we can propose to the committee that we keep it in line with the PFMA and provide the date of 31st of August as a solution to this, to bring more clarity to the legislation. The next issue that's been raised is in relation to the new section 43E, subsection 6, capital E, 6. It relates to the issue once again that the PFMA, it starts off by subject to the PFMA, and then it goes on. The issue that I think the Auditor General misunderstood is that in the PFMA, section 47.4C of the PFMA specifically excludes public higher education institutions. This is an institute, it's not the institution. The normal approach, and what's also important, is not affected, or it is not including any of the other education institutions. It's only higher education institutions that's excluded in the PFMA. So, Chair, the FET institutions, the institutes, AMET, in future, if this bill is accepted, the continuing education colleges, they are not excluded, and therefore the provisions of the PFMA is applicable. So the start off by saying subject to the PFMA is in line with the current legislation. The PFMA provides that a public entity is one that performs a public function and receives money from the fiscus, public money. And clearly, these institutes fall within that domain. already indicated in the previous section that the PFMA is applicable because it's subject to the PFMA, and therefore it would be appropriate to just take out the reference to the Public Audited Act as the PFMA already provides for it, and then it takes that concern out of play. So the next aspect or issue that one raised is it's under the new clause dealing with the intervention by the minister, and the whole issue that they raise is the word of difficulty, financial difficulty. They propose a definition to what is the meaning of this financial difficulty. Okay, it's an interesting definition that they propose, because what they say is that it means that if it appears that the institution is or will be reasonably unlikely to pay its debts as they became due or payable within the following next 6 months, or it appears to be reasonably likely that the institute will be placed under administration within the following 6 months. Now, this is the clause which deals with the directive by the minister for them to deal with it, with the final outcome, if they fail to adhere to that directive, that the administration will follow. It's a must provision in the Act. Now, here it says to provide a definition which is the criteria for which the administration will follow as a legal consequence, and then refer that administration or the likelihood of that administration as the description of what is a financial difficulty creates a problem. Sure, they've got also alternative to list a whole array of possible circumstances. And here, the difficulty, there's an interpretation rule that if you include a list, then anything that's excluded are presumed not to be included, and therefore you can easily miss the whole essence and purpose of it. What we've from the department side proposed as alternative for the committee to consider, instead of difficulty, one can propose impropriety. So if it is improper for the and we've looked at the definitions in the dictionary, it might be more applicable to the circumstances. Because here, what one must acknowledge is that the minister is not just going to have a vague sense of it. It is, if there is an allegation of anything that's improper, the minister then must provide the detail and an opportunity to the institution to say, or the institute to say, no, this is an institution, to the institution to say, provide me with reasons why I should not give you a directive. And based on that response, after complying with the rules of natural justice, the minister can then take that decision and provide them a specific directive according to the specific needs of that circumstance. So, Chair, that interaction will also clarify if it is a nonsense comment that the minister received, or if there's substance to the comment.
Okay, members, do we have a problem with agreeing that the minister must basically intervene when there is financial impropriety?
Yeah.
So financial impropriety will be a concept that we prefer, because the financial difficulties is very huge. It may even include when they are not able to pay the workers in accordance with their demands. Let's say the same in terms of
Christmas earn 100 rands, they're giving us 90. We are in financial difficulties to meet their demands, and then I go to the ministers and our problem. There are financial difficulties with this institution. We are now beginning to see workers leaving to other colleges, intervene. So impropriety is very appropriate for the purposes of the sector. Let's proceed. So you already know what we need, so don't be problems. We're already working for Tuesday.
Thank you, Chair. We will definitely provide something for you to consider as a possible amendment in that regard. Chair, the next issue is that, and Chair, I just need to allude to the fact that all this that we've dealt with here is also applicable to the other legislation, because it is a similar structure that's being used, so it will affect both pieces of legislation. So we will definitely, when we make the amendments, deal with amendments to both the bills. Chair, the next issue that's been referred to is that of Section 43G sub 2, which is dealing with the issue of that the minister may act in terms of subsection 1A or B only if the appointment of the administrator is in the interest of the institute and continuing education and training in an open and democratic society. They've raised a similar one with higher education. They indicated that it is too open, and it is, and what is the reason for this qualification to be included? With education, you've got many role players. It is the impact of the institution, which is very important, but what that decision also mean to the students, to the staff, to the broader, the impact of a neighboring institution is also a factor that the minister must consider. And that is why it is looking at that sector. And what is also very important is there is a definition for continuing education and training in the Act. There is a definition for higher education in the Higher Education Act. And therefore it is not an undefined concept. It is a defined concept which just the justification of that criteria is that it is not only looking at the institution, but the broader impact on the system as a whole. And that's why it is needed, Chair.
Of
necessary, but it has financial implication. If I'm making that decision as an administrator without taking the responsibility of budget constraints, it can lead to chaos. And therefore, the need to have a framework in place. Now, what is working currently is that there is already measures that's been provided by the Minister of Finance. And only if the request is going outside that framework for remuneration, then the Minister will be approached and, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, agree or dismiss that claim or that request. So, Chair, the approach is the system is not necessarily delayed, because there is a generic one which deals with the different rates that can be given to those type of appointments, but the flexibility is still there, that if it is going outside that norm, then there is the flexibility. But you can't take out the control of the minister and the Minister of Finance, because otherwise it can lead to incredible financial burdens. Chair, as I've indicated, we focus on the IFIT College Amendment Bill and the comments there, but if you compare it to the comments they made in terms of the Higher Education Act, it's exactly the same, and therefore we didn't repeat it. It's word by word the same. Chair, the aspect of the we've drafted slides where we've indicated where it deals with the HETLA also, and it is there. I'm not going to go through it in the same detail. The next presentation is that of ESA. Chair, ESA raised four issues. The first one is actually also linked with the last one, and that is to say that the function of the institute and the definition of the institute, there's a problem in the current proposal. They say the functions are too generic and is not identifying the specific needs. Now, Chair, I must be pointing out to you and the committee that the existing Section 38B, which is dealing with the functions, got four subsections. Three of them are proposed to be amended. The fourth one is a generic one to say the minister will prescribe any other function that is necessary, which gives a flexibility to the legislation and also provide more detail as to what would be the functions specific to that institute. Chair, however, it is our view that it might be necessary to also amend 38B sub D in order to also focus the minister to the scope and application when that regulation has been made, so that it is a focus on the specific needs and functions, and that it is also currently it's referring to duties only in the current wording of Section 38B sub D, and maybe to extend it to powers, functions and duties, so that it is the more holistic approach. To have a principal act, and the flexibility that you use in order to provide a meaningful statutory body that have meaningful functions and duties to perform their functions is also important, which is a concern raised. But we will also get a formal, or the committee will also get formal proposals by tomorrow from ESA. They've also will send it through to us, or the committee will also provide us with that copy, and we will also accommodate that in dealing with the specific language to be used in the amendments of strengthening that specific clause in the bill. So, Chair, we acknowledge that it can be better. We can provide a more focused approach, and we will provide the committee with additional language for them to consider in the next meeting.
Is there a provision that then permits the minister to formulate the regulations?
Yes, Chair.
Okay.
The current Act provides that function already to the minister. It is specifically providing, and I can read it to you, Chair. It is section 38B, capital B, and it reads, the functions of the National Institute for Higher Education are to, and then I'm going to sub D, perform any other duty which may be prescribed. Prescribed being defined as prescribed by regulations in the Act. So, Chair, as I indicated to you, the word duty might be amplified by functions and powers to be more inclusive. And we will also look at the proposal that's coming from ESA in order to see how we can bring those concepts together.
Yeah, I think we agree with your approach. The basic fact is that in South Africa, there are institutions that operate in the healthcare terrain. Many private institutions, there are several of them, if not many. Now, ESA is mainly worried about the prospect of proliferation of such institutions to the extent that it may tamper with the
autonomy.
Yes. Not necessarily autonomy, because those issues, yes, the autonomy of those, if to some extent those issues, that is, they have powers to interfere with their, and I don't think we'll ever go that route. And secondly, the aspect of money. They were very clear that it must not affect our baseline. So we understand that, and we supported them to say we wish there should be more resources in this area, you know. And in saying so, I hope they'll also listen to the committee when we say do not take the students who owe you money to the credit bureau. You must not increase fees in such a way that poor people can access specific institutions of higher brands and all that. So it's a good debate, but it's not for the law. It's not a debate that lies at our level. It's at the level of the minister. As to say, when he determines budget, they must look at the universities and so on. I think we agree with you, we can proceed.
Sorry.
Whilst we're still there, when we talk of these institutes, to whom are they accounted? I mean to say, as Parliament, are we going to be playing our oversight role over them? Well,
once it is now an institute that is under the minister,
then
naturally it's under us. It's going to be funded with money from the state. We're going to debate their budget. So there are accountants. Our terrain is also growing as a portfolio committee, Banga. We are debating the growth of our terrain.
of the function is also linked to the definition of what is a national higher education institute. Now, Chair, there is a undertaking that they will provide a wording of what that definition would be in their minds. But yeah, we've looked at it very carefully yesterday. The scope and application, which is prescribed by the minister, will define this specific animal to a large extent. The department is not against the idea of a definition for what is a national higher education institute, but we are also very mindful that the definition must be of substance. The easy approach is to say a national higher education institute is the institute as is established in terms of Section 39A, which is not really provide a clear definition as to what is this animal that you look at. How do you distinguish this animal from the next one?
So that there is an ordinary grammatical meaning of an institute. And we don't have a problem with that. We love it as it is, malleable as it is. So that whatever institute you create should not be circumscribed by a legal definition.
Yeah, and also the scope and application, which is to will be part of the legislative framework, will provide the extent, the scope and application of that animal that's being created through this provision.
What we're saying is the ordinary and grammatical meaning of it still prevail. The nature of the animal that the minister would be creating will emerge from the detail of the determination by the minister at the appropriate time. That is my understanding. The lawyers don't have a problem with that. Yeah, my explanation.
Chair, I thought that I hope that I'm not confused by your legalistic approach. I hope that I understand you clearly that, to me, a layman, there should be a clear definition to understand what is the difference between an institute and a university. That's what we mean, because we should understand, because there are many terms now, continuous community, college, that and that and that, and which HISA raised this issue yesterday, that we must be able to distinguish and know exactly what do we mean, where are the boundaries, where do we end. Therefore, I think if you are going to go to that direction, to me, I need to still understand what it is, because I wanted to raise even in that previous one. And I said I must wait maybe for future on the representation that these institutes will have student representatives. But I said maybe I don't understand what an institute is in these boards. I must wait until you get there.
We are raising a good debate, which I think I'm sure the linguist and also legal experts might want to play a role in that. There are various forms of institutions that offer education. Colleges, universities, institutes, decision that is undertaking research, imparting knowledge, ideas, it may provide education and all that. On any topic of its choice, in terms of Section 16 of the Constitution of South Africa, the freedom of academic research, you know, they can do almost anything. But that is why the professors wanted specificity, you know, because they felt it's just a matter of turf now, that we are universities now. The minister must create more universities in the form of institutes, and they could now take our budget, for instance. Have an institute that offers a degree in this, so specialized that many people go to it and get these degrees, and they deplete our resources and all that. That's why the debate arises, because an institute may equally enter the terrain of a university in terms of provisioning of education, providing an accredited program, and so on, if it is registered with the requisite quality assurance structures in the country, and so on.
Just to give you some examples on what you are saying, in the Nelson Mandela University of the Raymond Chabot Institute in the university itself. Now, we must give department time to explain. Maybe the issue raised by university is not necessarily an issue that needs not to be discussed. You have the Golden Becky Institute, the Helen Suzman Institute. What are we talking? What? If there can be a broad definition, which is an English-based definition of what an institute, but you must tell us what do you define an institute? What is your definition of an institute according to the Department of Education? Not just a broad definition.
The one aspect that's really important is not just institute. It's a national institute for higher education. So it's not the other institutes that the Honourable Member referred to. It's just institute. We've got the example of a college cafe. You've got an example of a college in nursery schools. You've got an example of grade college as a school. That doesn't mean that an institutional type of a community education and training college is now confused with any of the other colleges that exist. Because there's no copyright on the word college. There's no copyright on the word institute. But this act provides a framework of a national institute for higher education, which is a unique concept which must be within the framework. If that institute want to call themselves a national institute for higher education, they must comply with the act. Chair, it is also important that there's a clear definition of what is a higher education institution. The definition in the act refers to it means any institution that provides higher education. Now, Chair, that concept is also defined, and I'll come to it now. On a full-time, part-time, or distance basis, and which is merged, established, or deemed to be established as a public higher education institution under this Act, declared a public higher education institution under this Act, or registered or provisionally registered as a private higher education institution under this Act. And then, Chair, provide higher education got four very specific components. It means the registering of students for higher education, taking responsibility for the provisioning and delivery of the curriculum, assess the students regarding the learning program, and also conferring the qualification. So that is a clear definition of a institution. An institute cannot perform that function, because then it's an institution, not the institute. And the scope and application is therefore totally will for the institute will be on a different basis. It is dealing with the focus of that specific area to cover that specific scope and application field. So, obviously, there might be a good definition coming from the YESA. They promised that we will receive anything. At the moment, we haven't seen the definition, and as you've indicated, the ordinary meaning is very helpful in the context of the act as it is, and therefore we would obviously look at what is coming, but in the meantime we will also discuss it with all our colleagues.
also the chairperson is speaking, I get to know, reminded of the practical experience of minister representative in higher education. People who represent the minister of higher education, no clue of what higher education is all about, all of them. No clue. That's why institutions are collapsing, because these people who are supposed to advise the minister, you see, that institution is collapsing. No idea. They didn't even have a matric certificate, some of them. Therefore, that qualification is very important. Because we are in this crisis because of that. But now, you bear with me. No, not really. I'm still struggling. I think I must go back to the turn page and read more. I don't understand the institute, but I'll just be raising. Now, to me, that's a council, sort of a council, the board, sort of a council of an institution. Now, why students are not there? Remember, I don't understand an institute now. I'm raising this because I've seen now in governance, representation of stakeholders is being substituted in the main by these professional boards. I'm raising this, honorable members, in particular, many legislations that have come through that affect directly students, even the one we were passing yesterday, the VETS one. They are saying community service, but they are only going to consult the council of VETS. They are not consulting the students. Now, I'm very worried, Makubela, in the manner in which the students, with the new legislations, the role of the student population is being removed by the legislations we're passing. Therefore, what will be the role of students? Or there will be students there, or only books? If there are students, what is your understanding? Are they supposed to be replaced? Remember, I don't know an institute. What I know is an FET and a university.
Yeah, I think Banga has raised some issues which I actually also want to maybe just touch on. Firstly, if you just point out that two people need to be on the board with the experience of higher education, if you envisage a board, there must be different skills in that board, financial skills and management skills and that type of thing. And obviously all the other people must at least know how an institution like this is run. So does this not leave open then for the minister a gap to just appoint other people if he's only tied with two? So that is my worry. Should we not maybe expand a little bit more on specific issues that needs to be included in a board? So that we can have a proper run institution at the end of the day.
Because
maybe it's just a point of emphasis really, but he has really covered me. But with me too, I'm complaining with that too, the number. Because Jefferson, I'm afraid is to say we can end up being confined to the two and the rest of, you know, but then two with the specific knowledge that I think that number is too minimal for me. If ever we can say at least the members must have a specific knowledge, and because once you talk of specific knowledge, you are referring to if ever that person has a specific knowledge on finance and whatnot, but let us remove the two. It gives us I don't think taking us anyway,
then
just the number.
I think the proposal by Dr. Bosman takes us somewhere to say that let's develop some safeguard there. The legal experts know what I'm talking about. That safeguard. Banga has mentioned why would
So clearly that can be left out, but you did indicate a proposal that perhaps all the members must have specific knowledge and experience, which is fine. The problem is when we go specifically in terms of the way that we did in the NQF Act in regards to the SACWA board, we have to specify different categories of representation. You know, there should be education, there should be organized labor unions, etc. In the NQF Act. Now that would mean that we may have to have a bigger policy discussion first, because we did not go into that level of consideration. However, I think the issue of the institute has come up again with the member there. What I'm clear about, and perhaps maybe the legislation is not giving that clarity. The National Institute for Higher Education is defined in the existing legislation as that instrument that coordinates. It used to be in province, but now it talks about nationally. And the way it was read, the definition of educational institution, by implication, means that the National Institute cannot register students. Cannot. Because if it does, it's in conflict. Because the only place you can register students is through an institution. So the institute is the shell. It's about research. It's about coordination. It's about bringing things within the higher education and training system that is not even in the powers of the individual institutions, because they have powers in terms of their own statutes. So, you know, nowhere can this issue of turf battle come about. The only substantive point, obviously, is in the sharing of one pie that can come about. But we've addressed that issue in the second one. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, just in this regard, in terms of being more specific regarding the expertise of the members of this board, I think if we look at C as it is stated there, if we just remove the two, because I think it's wide enough, if you read that, must have specific knowledge and experience generally in higher education and specifically in the scope and application of the institute. So depending on what the functions and tasks will be in the regulations, that will be captured there. So I think if we just leave out the numbers, but that these people should at least have that.
Yes, sir. Chair, I don't want to propose anything, but my thinking is that HISA is an interested party in the National Institute. And then in my mind, the definition that they are giving suits most of them in HISA. Are they not suggesting that the two should be from them as an interested party?
Well, those of the I forgot my political science 100. They could consult a lobby group, an interest group, and all that. Both of them, in fact. And they are permitted to engage us and influence us if we think they've got valid points. You know, so that's what we're going to look at on Tuesday. We'll see what they're going to bring tomorrow. Whether it is not sectorial, is it strategic? It is. If it is sectorial, we'll deal with it as such. If it is strategic, it is foresight that is appealing, we'll take it. Yes.
Chair, I'm not for now entering the discussion in terms of whether we need
like that, but not enter into debating whether we need it this way or that way, because this meeting is not necessarily for that purpose. Otherwise, it's like we're trying to finalize with the department here to clarify this, get a position, move, get that position, and so on. And I don't think that's the purpose. Let's try and receive that clarity. Pass this whole thing. We'll have our next discussion, wherein then we'll be debating based on the clarity that we have got. Then we can now check all aspects and moving towards finalization of this one.
You are correct. I just going to do the last aspect of the presentation. I know the exercise is very helpful. Let me tell you how it is helpful. Because the legal experts are here. They are going to draft almost a document that will be finalized. As we debate on Tuesday, you'll see that sense of finality, because it will be including our comments. And then when you look at it already, you are happy that, yeah, this one is not in. Then you approve there. Then you know that indeed on Tuesday, you have difficulties of them going back to redraft and all that. I think that's been a very helpful exercise, but your input is correct. Can we now shoot on the last one and then we close the meeting?
The next one is a much shorter one. It was the Adult Learning Network. They comment on the defense couple. Once again, very supportive of the amendments. Chair, they raise the concern of the if this amendment of incorporating the AH centers into the Continuing Education and Training Colleges Act is approved, then would that mean it is a deletion of the rights? And it is the department's view that the right to adult basic education is embedded in Section 29 of the Constitution. That is the strongest right you can get. Institutional types is not creating a right. The right is in Section 29. And the general education and training sub-framework is also acknowledging that it is dealing with basic and further education. The word further education has also been taken out of the language used in this piece of legislation, which deals with the college types. But it doesn't mean that general education, basic education, further education is now taken out of play or any rights have been diminished. This is purely to identify an institutional type within the framework which is more responsive to the international best examples, and also, once again, the most important part is more responsive to the needs within South Africa in the delivery of this type of qualifications. And then, Chair, the other issues they've raised obviously is of a more policy discourse. There's no real implications to the bill at all. SAQWA is the next one. They didn't make a presentation.
Before that one, from where I'm sitting, I can take it that basic programs and all that will be covered. I knew when this debate was there, because this was from basic education. When we took the thing, we say it's no longer APED, it will be adult education and training and so on. But for a person who's somewhere, how do they sit comfortably to think that what we're looking for is covered, even if it's not said basic, but we are covered on this new dispensation? Is there somewhere where that is clarifying to say, yeah, the general one, the basic, the further one, it's part of this new exercise?
So, If we look at the history, the Constitution talks about basic education. The National Qualification Framework didn't use the word basic, they used general education. But the communication and the understanding was that general education is the start off point, the basic education that is referred to. Further education is referred to in the Constitution. The Constitution, when it comes to higher education, there is the reference in Schedule 4 of education excluding tertiary education. Not higher education is not used. So the definitions and the terminology used is obviously influenced by the constitutional principles within the international legislative framework and structures, which also in terms of our constitution is important when you look at the legislative framework. The concept of higher education is a framework which is influenced by the international experience. The proposal that we put now on the table is not to take away any of these concepts that's in the Constitution. Higher education is still seen as tertiary education. When it comes to basic education is a right that can be enforced, and that right is enforced through the qualifications that are offered within the NQF structure. And the important thing there is that the word adult basic education has been, the basic has been taken out of the current centers. It's AED centers, adult education and training centers. So we've already moved away from the constitutional principle because of the confusion that exists, that basic education provides for schools, which is general and further education, and then AED is linked to basic, but is not in the Minister of Basic Education. That debate was dealt with in this committee in 2010 after the new dispensation came into effect. To answer the honourable member, it is communication, and when a person enforces the right in the Constitution, that will provide the substance of that right. And there can be no doubt that if a person wants to enforce his right to adult basic education, that section will trump any other provision in any other law, unless you can justify that right has been substantially and materially adhered to, there will be a problem. It is our submission that the name change of the institutional type is not affecting the right. That right is still in the Constitution. That right is still reflected throughout the legislation and the legislative framework. And therefore, there is no diminishing or prejudice to any person's right.
Thanks, Chair. I mean, this is one deliberation, and I may say that Edward Boshoff is presenting the legal position. And in our discussions, we did have a slight difference. But I mean, the legal position holds, and it's correct. But my concern was that the issue is that at the moment, if the constitutional amendment goes through, there's no confusion, right? Because it limits the Department of Basic Education to providing schooling, and everything else will be with the to react, to just take ownership that adult basic education in terms of the constitution, you know, is covered in this particular legislation. So, Chair, I hope you allow me that bit of indulgence to differ slightly with the legal people. I'm not contesting the legal situation. I'm just saying the understanding, the communication, and the clarity.
I think it will be better because we don't have to wait until people want to exercise their rights or fight for it or something, wherein we come to clarify that in fact within this concept we are covered. Let's clarify the concept for everybody so that wherever they are, they know who to approach, where their own rights are going to be provided for and so on. And that ownership will clarify it, not just say this is with regard to this particular department or minister, but within this particular law. I think it will be useful. And we will not debate it. I just wanted that clarity to say, if we don't have it covered somewhere, it may mean that the general public may have difficulty even exercising that particular right.
This is a huge debate. The Adult Learning Network had a conference because they say they're a stepchild somehow. They're a stepchild. They've been a stepchild in basic education. They're a stepchild now in higher education and training, and must locate them in their proper space. But now, in your reflection, come and advise us on Tuesday with proper articulation of this aspect. We have noted their concern. It's quite a genuine one. Where do they find themselves? Because if they've got a problem, they'll go to basic education because of the name basic education. In fact, if I was their lawyer, I'll cite the president, cite the minister of basic education, cite the minister of education and training, and explain why I'm mentioning all of them. The predicament, so that there's no loophole as to why I have just mentioned almost everybody. Because there doesn't seem to, but adult basic education is now going to be dealt with by the Minister of Higher Education. But there's no specificity in their policy framework except only reference to the centers. But the work that is done by centers could be in the colleges. And if we want to do that in terms of programs, let's be very clear that basic education will be guaranteed in the programs we offer from level 1 to 4. You know? But that is the debate for the experts. I'm just raising all this chaff for you to sort out in the evening. Fortunately, lawyers don't enjoy debating complex matters. We give you one complex one. At least you will think, or you crack your legal qualities there. So we hope you will resolve that.
Well done, Chair.
Chair, if we can move to the next one.
Of our
conduct research, undertake and promote research, advise the minister in respect of the vocational and continuing education, develop material for career guidance, develop capacity and upgrade college teaching staff, provide management training in the college. It doesn't mean it's qualifications. It is specific skills that is required by that specific managers which we are talking about. It is not a formal qualification. It is not an infringement of what is in the domain of SAQWA and the institutions themselves. But it is to enhance the skills which is focused in the delivery by those specific people that have been identified in the management. So, Chair, the issues that we've picked up is that it's difficult to understand what is the motivation behind this comment, because it was not clearly motivated. What is the difficulty? Does it mean that everything must be through the university structure, or is it possible that in-house training, as we all know it, internal training cannot take place? And this is to enhance the skills in the workplace and to provide the necessary assistance in that regard. It doesn't mean that this institute might not use the formal training or the training in the higher education institutions to perform that function. It is also possible. It is just put a broad responsibility on this institute to take responsibility for those the development of those specific skills which is critical needed in the college sector institutions and is both institutional types. Chair, then in the scope of CRICEP, we need to take care that it is that the mandate does not overlap with other organizations and entities. Chair, once again, it is linked to the same issue that we've addressed in the second bullet, and that is the institutes are not institutions. They cannot train students. They cannot deliver on it. This is a procedure or a structure to assist and develop them to do their work better, more efficient, and provide more quality education to our students. And it is not an overlap. It is in support, in assistance. It is there to address those critical areas where there is currently a vacuum in the delivery in the institutions, and to address that critical skills needs through a coordinated manner. And then it also makes the comment that SAQWA will support and fulfill the mandate and not execute the mandate of other departments of all entities. Yeah, that is our response. It should be in red, that last bullet point. It is our view that there is no conflicting or overlapping position between your institutes and the departments or other organizational responsibilities, including SAQWA and the QCs, as there is no quality control given to any of the also make comments. First of all, their support. They make implementation suggestions to the, which the Department of Higher Education and Training will take up and make sure that we can follow it. The issues that they raise is not a have no impact on any of the provisions in the bill, in our view. In terms of the Higher Education and Training Bill, some comments confuse the role of the National Institute for Higher Education with that of the public higher education institutions. Once again, it is not envisaged that the National Higher Education Institute will register any students or provide education and training, which is the type of comments that we would see in their submission. Here it also addresses the interests of students should also take into account where reference is made to the interest of the National Higher Education Institute and higher education and training in general. As I've already indicated, the reference to higher education means that it includes all the different role players and definitely includes the interest of students as well. And it's always been interpreted like that. It is also constitutional principles. That's also embedded in that, and you've already indicated the fact that that is part and parcel of the new democratic society in South Africa. Sartu further requires that the bill must provide limitations or qualifications when the higher institute or the National Institute for Higher Education is closed. The closure of a institute is obviously an administrative decision which is subject to the promotion of administrative justice, and where the minister is by law required to take the decision only after all those that's negatively affected by that decision has an opportunity to come in and provide a specific position, and that it is there is a rationale, a sound reason to justify that decision. So, Chair, it is already covered, but obviously if the committee needs a more clearly spelled out criteria and process, there is ample examples in legislation that can be introduced in the legislation. Chair, the next one is dealing with Vryheid district examination. Chair, they raise an issue in regard to the definition of educators and their qualifications and requirements, their functions and their legislative requirements should be within the Schools Act, and that they're not sure where it is currently lying. It is our view that the AET Act is already providing a clear framework that your educators in adult education and training is appointed in terms of that act as public servants. The reason for it is that the South African Schools Act and the Employment of Educators Act are legislation under the control of the Minister of Basic Education, and it is already amended to be focusing on school education only. The proposal that this practitioners should be recognized as educators in terms of the Schools Act, it's an issue that this committee had to look at in the past. public service. The Public Service Act is the main act. It's a principal act when it comes to the employment of public servants, and it also has some deviations permitted, but it is permitted to the Employment of Educators Act only, and not to any other legislation such as the AED or the if this act comes into being as the Continuing Education and Training Act, there is no such a deviation provided in the Public Service Act, and therefore, Chair, it is not possible within a legal framework to adhere to these comments. Chair, the next one is from Umfolozi College. Chair, they once again raised the issue of the program levels. We presume it is the NQF levels 1 to 5 to be offered in continuing education and training colleges instead of up to level 4. Currently, your AED centers can only offer NQF level 1. This is moving it to NQF level 4, which is at least a major improvement. Policy, this course that the white paper focus on is dealing with this aspect of NQF level 5, where it belongs. But at the current moment, the legislative framework, as I've indicated earlier on, is already in place, and there can be unforeseen consequences if this is amended without going through a proper consultation process where all role players can play a role. They also, in regard to the definition as is contained in section 1G of the FEDCA Act, they propose that full-time, part-time, and distance learning, which is part of the definition of a college, should also include open learning. The aspect of open learning is a concept which is not clearly defined. It has many meanings. And the former three, which is full-time, part-time, and distance learning, is a well-known concept in education, and it provides legal certainty. There can be debated that open learning is already included in distance learning, but it's also a good argument that it's not. But to provide legislation where there is no clear definition of what is the meaning, even internationally, which is not 100% defined, would create some difficulty, and it is not supported from the department side. The next issue that they raise, it says there must be the position of a campus manager must be clarified against that of a lecturer. Just section 20 of the Act was amended last year, where it made it clear that you've got your lecturing staff, which include your managerial staff, and it also provides for your non-lecturing staff. Your campus manager or your principal or your deputy principal, they are people who are also responsible to take control of the core business of the institution, which is the academic function. And therefore, the next concern which they raised, that the chairperson would be in a conflict of interest to be the chair of the reasoning as to why there is a need, which is in line with the broad principles, but they are not affecting the legislation as such, and there's no comments from the department in that regard. The adult learning network, we've already dealt with that one. Thank you, Chair. That is our evaluation and response to the comments and the presentations.
No, thank you very much. We'll thank all the organizations that made presentations, including the individuals, that is Halalisani, Zulu, and Tebisi Lezwane. They made very wonderful contributions. The committee has taken note of those, including that they would like to see colleges in the areas, in the municipalities where the state is so keen about education. So it is a matter which, as a committee, will refer to the department to look at. It's not part of the legislation. At this point, I would like to